Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. What a crazy time to be alive. What a crazy time to be holding Bitcoin. I'm sure that all of you are on the regular chat holding Bitcoin. You're happy with the day. Bitcoin keeps rising and rising. Isn't it amazing? Personally, I'm so happy. I knew this was coming. I told you guys to buy Bitcoin at 16K, and you've more than doubled at this point if you listened to Papa JF. Life is so comfortable in a Bitcoin bull run, and this one doesn't seem to be accompanied by particular memetics. You know, the past Bitcoin bull runs, they were accompanied by crazy news cycles around Trump, for example. This one is just Bitcoin doing its natural thing. It's so funny, and it's going to keep going up. Let me tell you, it's not stopping. It's going to reach above 100K, in my view. That's what I've been waiting for since the last bull run. So I've been holding on to my Bitcoin because I was not satisfied with the last peak. This peak, I think, will be satisfying. John Drake says, happier with my Solana today. Yeah, there's always these weirdos with their Solana. Always there to mess the party. Technically, Solana, if you take the window from 43 days ago to today, Solana has outperformed Bitcoin. Ah, you guys are disgusting. Get out of my sight, John Drake. I don't want to see you. Saturn Shine says, "Is that a new is that a new currency?" No. Let's not start dragging people's attention away from Bitcoin to Solana. Oh my God, are they annoying? They've been annoying me since the beginning, because Solana is an old school alternative crypto. I still haven't been explained by a single one of you guys what is the purpose of Solana. Like, if Solana disappears tomorrow morning, what happens? What is going off? What is cracking in human society? What relies on Solana? Cosmic Nut says, is the BTC decoupled from the market? It was starting to be seriously decoupled. We had a couple of bumps outside of the coupling pattern 1 week ago. I haven't looked today, but I wouldn't be surprised that today is a continuation of the previous effects that were of decoupling. More segments from the Elon Musk interview with Joe Rogan. Elon Musk, Twitter was completely controlled by the far left. Well, yes, they were. We knew it firsthand because we were their target. Appearing on Joe Rogan's podcast Tuesday, ex-owner Elon Musk laid out how Twitter was acting as an arm of the government before it took over and was completely controlled by the far left. The degree to which Twitter was simply an arm of the government was not well understood by the public, Musk said, adding, and it was whatever. Everything was like Pravda, basically. A state publication is the way to think of old Twitter, a state publication. There was basically oppression of any views that even I would say be considered middle of the road, Musk continued, adding, certainly anything on the right, and I'm not talking about far right, I'm just talking mildly right. Yes, that is a proper description. And the return of a free Twitter has been good. Good for the Overton window. Good for now we have an Elon standing for certain racial talking points. It's very good. It's been a beautiful event overall. We've not had everything we wanted from Twitter. That's too bad. And I feel that in Elon, there is still this normie perception of the far right. What is it that's being criticized of the far right? Everything that's being criticized of the far right is things that the far right doesn't stand for. It's always a straw man, and it's always what the journalists say rather than what the far right itself says. It seems to me that there's lots of reasonable positions that people have still been banned for from Twitter and have not been recovering their account. End of the line, Joel says, academic agent has said that once you're blocked by him, there's no way back. Also, it's your loss. Well, I have been blocking academic agent because he says that he doesn't want to interact with Keith Woods' friends. And I consider myself a Keith Woods' friend. So it's like, if you want to play that childish game, I'm going to block you just because I will consider that you don't want to talk to me. So it's too bad. I don't think I've lost anything in my life, though, having blocked academic agent. I've not been feeling cognitively deprived. I've not seen any degradation in my computational mathematical abilities. It seems that life just goes on after academic agent. Representative Brian Mast says there are no innocent Palestinian civilians. Oh. Careful here, guys. We will debunk. We will hear a debunking of this often reported conception, false conception, of the idea of an innocent Palestinian baby, okay? Because you don't know. You don't know how it is in Israel. He knows. And you may not understand the extent of the guilt of Palestinians and how it applies to all Palestinians. And so he's going to debunk, I'm not kidding here, he's going to debunk the idea of an innocent Palestinian. Let's hear his case.
I would encourage the other side to not so lightly throw around the idea of innocent Palestinian civilians.
It's very irresponsible here. Just the word, bringing up the subject of innocent Palestinian civilians is such a overused phrase, very dangerous here.
Is frequently said. I don't think we would so lightly throw around the term innocent Nazi civilians.
I love the current state of the world, which is forcing people to examine their presuppositions. Like, years ago, you would need someone as extreme as me to wake up people a little bit from their delusions and say, hey, you know, maybe there were some innocent civilians in Dresden that weren't into committing genocides at all, and that got burned by these napalm coverage that we were doing. You know, maybe we killed innocent people in Germany. Maybe we've done some unfair stuff here. And it's now a regular talking point. This is so, I didn't expect this from the world, because when I was making these edgy talking points, it was mostly from an epistemological perspective. I don't care that much about Germany, don't care that much about Germany, about Dresden. But I was like, I'd like to wake up people and fix them on the truth, the pursuit of the truth and what it requires. It requires abandoning the Santa Claus in your head. It requires abandoning the ideas that you cherish sometimes. But at this point, we have regular normie politicians making these points. The problem here is that, yes, you know, innocent Nazi may be something that may have existed. There may have been kids in Germany that were totally innocent of any crime, couldn't possibly have committed any crime, and yet have received bombs that were meant for the Nazis, and they could have been from Nazi families, and yet they were killed.
During World War II, we're going to speak later about a bill related to Palestinian education and the fact that in their schools run by the Palestinian Authority, not Hamas, not Palestinian Islamic Jihad, not Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, not Lion's Den, not any of the other groups, run by the Palestinian Authority, the anti-Semitic teachings that they put within their own schools, right?
So we don't want to fund a culture that teaches anti-Semitism. I see.
The list goes on and on of the examples we could give of what somebody might just call a rank-and-file Gazan or a rank-and-file person in the West Bank or just a Palestinian that maybe they don't say falls under that name of Hamas or Palestinian Islamic Jihad, but by any classical definition would absolutely be considered a terrorist.
This is a stretch-out case, okay? Because you're making the case that maybe there is some random teenager out there that could have committed terroristic actions without falling under the label Hamas. But you are far from having made a case that every teenager out there that is receiving bombs right now over their heads is part of Hamas, or it would qualify as a terrorist without being part of Hamas. It's not by bringing a possible example that you debunk the general case. The general case is, given the hundreds and thousands now of children that have been killed, certainly a massive amount of innocent Palestinians have died now at the hands of Israel and under the umbrella of the United States. That is it. You're not going to change this case by saying, well, you know, maybe there are some of these teenagers that maybe could have been terrorists. You don't know. I don't know. I don't know what's the percentage. But whatever percentage that is, it must be a very small percentage. There must be an age at which you can't be a terrorist. There must be an age at which you can't even walk. And yet some of these very young children have been killed. End of the line, Joel says, JF, if there was a choice between the World Wide Web of 1996, i.e. total freedom but no real video streaming, or the web of 2023, highly censored but great video streaming, which would you prefer? You know, I'm eternally satisfied by the progress of the world. So I think I would choose today, because the reality is video streaming is a game changer. It's a game changer for who controls the news narrative, and you can feel it. You can feel on Twitter right now things that are happening that wouldn't have been happening in 1996. Yet in 1996, you had the right to start an HTTP server. You had the right to edit an index.html file. You had the right to do all these things, but you wouldn't do it. And yet you would stream. You would video stream. So video stream is a game changer, and I choose the world of 2023 because perhaps one world I would have issues choosing is the censorship era of 2020. That I would not choose. Perhaps I would prefer the 1996 web to this, because in 2020, you couldn't even have a Twitter account if you were a dissident thinker. But you give me 2023 with Elon, some opportunities of streaming outside of the mainstream platform, and some hope that Twitter will get better in terms of streaming, I choose 2023.
Somebody that in the last couple weeks had been conducting kidnappings, murders, brutality that is...
Oh, so we're starting from a hypothetical teenager that could be not from Hamas, but still a terrorist. And now that person has committed rape and kills, and we are still in the hypothesis. We're still not satisfied that there's not 99% of the children you're bombing that aren't terrorists.
Nearly unspeakable. So again, as we look at this and what kind of exemptions should and should not exist, I would ask that it be looked at through that lens, that, you know, There's not this far stretch to say there are very few innocent Palestinian civilians.
Half of the Palestinian population is minor. In the U.S., they couldn't consent to anything, really. In the U.S., their legal status would be whatever their parent decides, and they would be responsible for no action they commit. That's half of the Palestinian population. And you can see he has difficulty reconciling even his own brain of his English brain, you know, trying to output sentences that make sense. And he's like, I think it's not totally a stretch to say, and he has an inversion of logic here, to say that most Palestinians are not innocent. Wow. This is judgment at the group level, like I've been waiting for. Ladies and gentlemen, it has come. It has arrived. If you would like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey Super Chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, feel free to use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. What the fuck? This is crazy. And he's a congressman. Yeah, absolutely. This is mainstream Republican guy. James says, can I call in? Oh, sure. We can have James. Let's see what James has to say. I'm going to enable my JF Lounge. All right. And just so it doesn't rape your ears, I will lower the sound. All right. Let's see if James is here. Hello, James. How are you doing?
Hey, JF. Hey, I had a revolutionary phenotype question.
Oh, yeah. Let's go for it. I always love these questions.
Yeah, I was curious because I know you theorize about the first phenotypic revolution with RNA to DNA. But do you think, and I know that we are our genes, so talking about animals in a way without talking about the genes has a little bit more diversion from it in complexity, but with higher level animals that we have today in plants, without, say, if humans never existed, without technology, could a revolutionary phenotype happen in dolphins or elephants or these higher level animals?
It's a good question. Here's the problem. One of the things that protects life forms from a revolutionary phenotype is what you could call phenotype to genome isolation. In other words, there are not many species. We don't know of any species since the last 4 billion years that have been evolving to tweak their genes in some way. It's a direction that is very hard to take, and the more complex the organism becomes, the less likely it is. Because when you're a bacteria, your genes are very much within the game. You know, they're just hanging around in your cell. You are just one cell. When you get to a multicellular organism like a dolphin or a moose, you have the problem that most of the organism is very, very far from the genes that will lead to reproduction. Most of the organism is operating machinery that is very distant from the balls and from the ovaries. So you have this problem that evolution expands outside of the domain of the gene, and it expands into a phenotype that is more and more distant, less and less familiar, if you will, with the genes. Whereas the bacteria, you look at the life of a bacteria, it revolves a lot very close to the gene. And the molecules that are reading from the genes, they're always close to the genes also. They're always less than a millimeter away from the gene. When you think about it, it's fascinating. Your entire life, you have some of your molecules in your brain that are about a meter away from your balls. The bacteria, there's not a single molecule of her that is more than 1 millimeter away from her gene for her entire life. So I think that simpler organisms simply have less genome isolation from the phenotype, and therefore they can be easily more tempted. And on top of it, you have the virus. The viruses in the bacteria, they just have one membrane to pass, and boom, they have access to the genome. And so if you have a virus situation to initiate the phenotypic revolution, it's much more easy for the virus. Whereas the viruses in the complex organism, they have so much more temptations to go than go at your balls. They can go at your neurons, and then they will be like rabies, and they will escalate your neurons until they find your brain. They can live from eating in your brain, but they are essentially living on a reserve, not on genes. They are pillaging your phenotype without ever accessing your genes. And it's never really worth it from their perspective, the viruses of complex organism, to go intergenerational, unless that's their specific strategy, in which case you have, for example, the retroviruses will have the ability to hide in your genome, get into the next generation, and then deploy in your children. I guess that if there was a dolphin revolutionary phenotype, it wouldn't go through technological intelligent modification of their genes. They are way too far from it. You need to be interested at so much substrates and so much technologies before you get there. I wouldn't see it happening in any other species. But one serious possibility could be that it could happen in any of these species through a virus. So what you will need is a virus that is like a retrotranscriptase. But instead of doing the RNA to DNA thing, it would do the DNA to something else thing. And why would it do this? I don't know. But you would have to have a virus that starts discovering another molecule than DNA, and it would infect the human phenotype or infect the dolphin phenotype, get into their reproductive organs, but somehow keep a storage of itself outside of the DNA world into another molecule that it would have discovered.
That's very interesting. But do you think it ever happened in animals before, but this phenotypic revolution was not evolutionarily fit, and so they just all died out because the new revolutionary phenotype that happened just caused them to die out and lose the evolutionary game?
I have to grant the plausibility, the possibility. Yes, you could think that there was a dead end at some point. Some mini phenotypic revolution began, but it wasn't good and it disappeared. But my bet would be it didn't happen ever. Because there's so much of what has happened actually on Earth that has left traces into living organism, yet we don't find extant organism that have this feature. For example, Escherichia coli, the bacteria, it has a trace in its genome of a retrotranscriptase, if I'm correct. Don't quote me on it, but there's something like this. I believe I mentioned it at the end of the revolutionary phenotype. So E. coli as in its genome, the apparatus to do retrotranscription from RNA to DNA, but we don't know of any E. coli that does it. So we have the genetic fragments that show that this has happened. There was once an ancestor to E. coli that had a retrotranscriptase mechanism, and yet we don't know of any modern E. coli that does it. So that's to give you an example that in biology, I expect the things that have happened but didn't lead to anything, I expect them to leave some traces, at least in what we call, like the legs of the whale, these vestigial organs. And there is such a thing as vestigial genetics. It's a field and it's super interesting. I don't have any vestigial genetic story telling me that a secret phenotypic revolution has happened that we haven't caught.
Yeah, because I've been thinking about this because I've obviously been thinking about because you make a lot of allusions to bees and ants when you talk about the revolutionary phenotype, but they haven't gone through an evolutionary phenotype, and I was thinking, well, why hasn't this happened? I guess it's because of those reasons. They subjugated themselves so much, but you need, once you separate yourself so far from the genes, as you say, you become such a complex life form. then it becomes way more difficult. It almost reminds me of like a warfare metaphor where the general that goes all in on one strategy, kind of like how these simple life forms are, they're so close to their genes, they kind of have a fanatical view of it where they're so close to their genes that the commander that's so ideological about a way of winning, he either wins totally or loses everything. And that's kind of how RNA and DNA were, where they would win the race or completely lose it. And we're just more the safe play animals.
Those are very interesting thoughts, because I think that there is something like a revolutionary phenotype that did happen in bees. But the problem is it doesn't lead to a radical redo of the genetic constitution. And therefore, I think it's not even worth calling it a revolutionary phenotype. Just like I've explained at the end of my book in the sex chapter, I've explained that when a branch of a tree leads to another tree, you could consider this a phenotypic separation. But the new tree has the exact same gene as the old tree, so perhaps it's not worth categorizing it as a separate biological event. You can just call it a change of sperm. Like if all of your sperm were to die, there might be another piece of your body that says, oh, let me transform into a meiotic cell so that I can produce my own sperm. And in which case, you just have the same organism, the same genome, deploying the same strategy, but doing it in an imperfect world where it had to change plans. There is something like a phenotypic revolution in bees, which is when the queen dies and there are certain colonies of bees that are capable of getting candidate bees to take over the role of the queen. There will be one of the sterile workers that will somehow, it will detect that the queen is not there and it will grow itself into a new queen. If you consider that the bee colony is a phenotype and they are all phenotypic machines of the queen, you could say that in this reversal of a bee that was meant to be phenotypic, that eventually becomes the carrier of the genes, becomes a queen, you could say that this is a phenotypic revolution happening at another dimension, if you will, where rather than the replacement of the media of the genome, what is happening here is the same genome or a very similar DNA genome will be still carried by the new queen. But first, it's not perfectly related because there is some variance in which male leads to which sterile worker in the colony. So you could argue that the new queen, there's a bunch of genes that she has that perhaps the old queen didn't have. And yeah, it could be seen as a phenotypic revolution, not of the media, but of the body, a phenotypic revolution of something that was meant to be phenotypic or somatic, as Richard Dawkins calls it, and eventually had to become the genes because the genes weren't available.
Yeah, when you give the tree example, I would classify that as the same tree, right? Because it has the exact same genes. And therefore, it's the same tree, but it has a different body, as you say. And so, I guess I don't know. I guess I wouldn't consider that a phenotypic revolution because it's the same body in the same gene. You know, it's a different body, but the same genes. And I think the genes is generally the point of the whole revolutionary phenotype.
Yeah, but then you're faced with a problem, which first, it's not about phenotypic revolutions, it's about phenotypic separations for the tree. And you're faced with the problem, is a phenotypic separation ever a change of genes? And that's a big question, because even in my example that I give of a phenotypic separation, the little cells that go on to live as male and female, that were initially part of the phenotype of a queen organism, they still bear the genes of the organism. They just bear them in divisions, split in two, basically. So you still have the genes out there. They have just been separated into agents. male and female, what would become eventually male and female. So then there's the question of if you don't allow phenotypic separations to be such, to be defined as such, just because there's no change in the gene, then even my phenotypic separation is not a phenotypic separation.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, yeah, thanks for answering my question. I've been thinking about that all week, and it's good to get an answer on that.
All right. Thanks for coming. Was there anything else tonight?
No, that was the only thing I was thinking about.
All right. Thank you for calling. Bye-bye. Jay says, I have a proposition to improve the server on Discord. I'm thinking we add in a new role called Professional Inseminator and give it a silver color. If you are curious as to how the silver color would look on a profile, I give you permission to assign the role to my account. I think it's not a bad idea. You know, I hear that Elon is headed toward transforming X into a full-fledged dating service. That is great. That is great, because the algorithmic power of Twitter can serve more than just news. It could totally pair people who fit well together. And I think that Elon, if he's set on this program, I think he can pull it. I think he can actually, you can actually have a baby boom, a Elon boom, where the actions of Elon in the world will have resulted in a small tick on the demographics of white people in America. I think that is wonderful, and I like the idea of doing similar on the Discord. Perhaps people labeled as professional inseminators could be those reference males that we know are single, that we know are available to receive insemination offers by women. Insemination applications by women. That would be a great idea. I really love it. Israeli army suffers more casualties as Hamas publishes video showing tanks blown up. The Israeli death toll is rising, and Hamas has claimed to have ambushed and destroyed several tanks as they plunge deeper into Gaza City. 15 Israeli soldiers have now been killed in the Gaza operation. And I think that's an official number, but I've seen videos of lots of casualties, lots of injuries, IDF soldiers coming back in choppers. It seems that there is much damage being done. So it seems that the Gaza resistance is activating itself and properly operational, despite having been carpet bombed. And so that's a reassuring sign for the side of Hamas and the Palestinians that that they are showing a capacity to resist to these to the technological superiority of the IDF. Valet says, I would like to hear JF weigh in on the Buffy St. Mary controversy. I'm sure he has an interesting analysis. Buffy St. Mary. What is? I think one of you talked about it to me. Buffy St. Mary. Indigenous Northerners wrestle with the legacy of Buffy St. Mary. Buffy St. Mary's U.S. birth certificate opens indigenous adoption wounds. What is the controversy? How do I read about specifically? Buffy St. Mary's indigenous parentage is questioned. An investigation by the CBC disputed a key part of St. Mary's story, saying that a birth certificate shows she was born to a white family in Massachusetts. Okay, well, interesting. I don't know much of the details. I would have to read about it, and the New York Times article is gatekept. But it makes me think, will we ever find an actual Native American? Or was it all this time it was just white Europeans appropriating a culture? You have Elizabeth Warren, you have Buffy St. Mary. They were just putting feathers on their head and they were getting very tanned, you know, by going to the tanning salon to get this very tanned look, and that's it. You're just dealing with a bunch of old tanned women who are wearing feathers onto their heads for the kick. It's like the true Scotsman fallacy. Will we ever find the true Native American, or are they all bullshitters? Valet says, that's okay, JF, just some fascinating Canadian content. Buffy was the wrong shade of orange, to be honest. Yeah, I'm looking at her. She does look like a very tanned European. She doesn't particularly look like an indigenous person when you think about it, and when you know about, like, indigenous genes. I can recognize them easily in, you know, the North American Native American. I can recognize them. This looks more like a very tanned European woman who has become very old. You know, remove the feathers, remove all of these things, and remove the tanning. She doesn't have much features left that I would call Native American. Valet says she's half Italian, half English. Well, that is fascinating. And there she is. For all of her career, including black and white photos, she's been always wearing these Native American symbols. She's been wearing this all of her life. I mean, at some point, you have to give her the at least honorary Native American status. Like, she tried hard. She tried hard. Dead Star says, AA simple three rival factions chart is worth a look. The link is timestamped.
Lecture.
Oh my God. Well, what is this? Neocon, techno globalist, third worldist. Ultimate aim, remake the world in America's image, the neocon. Globalist government for the techno-globalist, and equalize relative standings of the West and Third World for the Third Worldists. That is correct. I think there's kind of a mixed here, techno and globalist. I understand that it can go hand in hand, but those are separate positions still. I can understand that they go together sometimes. And yes, there are some WEF types that are very techno enthusiast, but I would treat these subjects separately in general. Goals of the neocon: maintain American plus Israeli hegemony, combat anti-Semitism. They use the American hard and soft power, they promote forever wars, and they have lobby groups, Wonk World, what is that? I don't know. US government, conservative establishment, U.S. media, and organized Jewish groups. The techno-globalists, they want globalist institutions, eliminate distinctions between people, promote technocratic solutions, digital ID, promote globalist oversight. The thing is, there is some interaction between these two columns. I would be careful at presenting them separately. You know, a lot of the globalism actually belongs with the neocons and serves the neocon. And a lot of these organizations are working at globalism. So careful in not interpreting these two columns as isolated from each other. And then the third world is, they want transfer of wealth from the West to the third world, eliminate Western advantages, promote mass immigration / accepting refugees, promote multilateralism and mechanism to reduce national sovereignty and NGO network left-wing parties. Yes. But this trifecta is at times working in each other's interest. They are, you know, organized Jewish group being put in the neocons here. The organized Jewish groups are also participating to third worldism and also participating to techno-globalism. So is it really... Like, when I look at the ADL, I don't see a purely neocon program. I see a program that can totally contribute to these three dimensions of Jewish advancement in the world. Idiocracy squared, Democrat dick joke about Trump makes it to the Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments on Wednesday in a case after the U.S. Patent Office denied a trademark involving a dick joke about Donald Trump, which they say requires explicit permission from the former president. The plaintiff says that his First Amendment rights are being violated. Elster is a Democrat, and she began selling T-shirts with the slogan, "Trump too small." Following an exchange during a 2016 primary debate when Marco Rubio said that Trump had small hands, to which Trump replied, "Look at those hands. Are they small hands?" And he referred to my hands. "And if they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's a problem. I guarantee." Regardless, based on Wednesday arguments, it appears that the Supreme Court looks likely to affirm a U.S. Patent and Trademark Office decision that rejected the application, which was filed in 2018. The USPTO rejection was based on the notion that people would associate the word Trump with the former president, which they said would require written consent as required under a 1946 law as the Lanham Act. Elster has argued that his free speech rights are being violated if he can't register a trademark criticizing a public figure. However, the Supreme Court doesn't appear to be buying it. Justice Neil Gorsuch noted that there is a long historical tradition of prohibitions on trademarks that reference living people, suggesting that there was no sense at the time that there was a free speech issue. Why not just look to the history? Even if Elster cannot trademark the phrase, there is nothing to stop him selling the shirts, Justice Sonia Sotomayor pointed out, questioning whether there was any restriction on free speech in the first place. Yeah, so I don't think this guy is being kept from selling the shirts with the sentence. Now, you could argue that part of free speech rights is the right to protect your speech with a trademark. But I think those are your commercial rights. I don't think they are fundamentally First Amendment questions. Those are matters of commercialization rights. They are business rights. They are important rights, but they are rights that are much less absolute and that are not in play here, I think. I think it's wrong to say the protection of speech is a First Amendment, the protection of speech by trademarks is a First Amendment issue. The First Amendment issue is whether you can say it without being, pursued by the government. And I think there's no question. I think it's... But then you have certain music groups that have trademarked their music name. And let's say that their music name was Fuck the Communists, let's say. And there were cases like this that made it to the Supreme Court. Can you trademark? Can the trademark office reject an application because they are offended by your name, the name of your group? And they can't. The Supreme Court has judged this is a this is hurting your First Amendment right. You should be able to have an offensive nickname as a music group. So then the question becomes, are all protections to all speech by the trademark office subject to First Amendment concern? I think that the trademark office is making the right decision here. I believe that if there is any component of speech to be owned in the brand Trump, it shouldn't be yours. It should be Trump's brand. So there you are applying and trying to build a brand that borrows the name Trump. Now, your brand is an anti-Trump brand. Maybe there is a speech component here. Just like there was the fuck the communist cannot be rejected because you're offended. But the trademark office here is not rejecting the name because they're offended. They're rejecting the name because it's just a rehash of a Trump brand, but in the negative direction. I mean, maybe there's a First Amendment case here. You could say, I have the right to speak negative speech in my against Trump, and I have the right for this to be my branding trademark. Just like they had the right to have fuck you, the communist, as a group name. It's a tight question. It's not super clear to me. John Garas says, fuck the fuckers would be a good band name. Yes. No. Interesting. SEC charges SafeMoon, crypto token, and executives with fraud. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission has charged crypto company SafeMoon for fraud and the sale of unregistered securities. Moreover, the agency announced that it is charging the company's executive team, including founder Kyle Nagy and CEO John Caroni. A press release issued today announced the charges regarding the company's orchestration of a massive fraudulent scheme through the unregistered sale of the crypto asset security SafeMoon. Additionally, the SEC alleges that the firm misappropriated investor funds for personal use. So we have the SEC going after single projects, trying to hit the world of crypto, but in a way that, these projects, I've never seen them as legitimate. SafeMoon, I've never invested in this. I think that the name was scammy to begin with. There is an inherent contradiction between going to the moon and being safe. Going to the moon is dangerous, and these meme tokens are dangerous. So I don't know what they will have against the team. Specifically, the SEC has announced it is charging crypto company SafeMoon with fraud and the sale of unregistered crypto securities. This is basically, if they can define your crypto as some form of representation of the success of your community, they're going to call it a security. And if you're an American or you are within the space of countries that would extradite to the US, then, and if you are public about being the owner of that crypto, then they're going to charge you with unregistered sale of security, which is basically that you have to follow a course and a license and apply for a license as a broker, basically, as someone who knows about finances, if you want to sell something that represents the trust in a corporation or in a group or in a community. Normally, securities is like stocks and shares in a company. But crypto has emerged, and depending on how you distribute your crypto, it will fall under the legal definition of a security or not. And most of the time, is your nuclei of the founder of this crypto, are they keeping some of this crypto to sell it to profit from the rise of the community price, the price as it gets sold publicly? If so, just like Odyssey was doing, just like Library was doing, then they will be judged a security. And then the question is, are you accessible to the legal justice system of America? Watcher Guru says the U.S. government has arrested SafeMoon founders John Caroni, Kyle Nagy, and Thomas Smith. Yeah, it's not looking good for the people who reveal themselves and the people who try to innovate into the crypto world. But what they are doing ultimately is they are putting themselves first to profit from the rise of the things they've created. That is what can put you in trouble. Facing 110 years in prison, Sam Bankman-Fried can't recall what he did at FTX. He reportedly said he couldn't remember over 100 times in cross-examination. Sassoon grilled Mr. Bankman-Fried about the inconsistencies between his public statements and how he ran his crypto empire before it collapsed spectacularly in November, added that he wasn't significantly involved in the hedge fund he founded, Alameda Research. After much pressing, Bankman-Fried eventually confirmed one aspect of prosecutors' sprawling fraud and conspiracy case, that his hedge fund, Alameda, in an unheard-of arrangement, could pull out billions of dollars it did not own from FTX, using a near-unlimited line of credit. "I don't deny it," Bankman-Fried reportedly said, but he seemed to backtrack on that admission hours later, saying, "I'm not sure," when asked if Alameda was allowed to exceed normal borrowing limits. Bankman-Fried reportedly drew a rebuke from Judge Lewis Kaplan when the defendant asked Sassoon to rephrase certain questions. "Could you just answer the question instead of trying to ask the questioner what she's referring to?" Kaplan told Bankman-Fried, when asked whether he was involved in trading at Alameda, a hedge fund he owned 90% of, Bankman-Fried replied, "Depends what you mean by trading." The New York Post article said Sassoon then showed jurors several instances of Bankman-Fried ordering lieutenants to make trades on Alameda. Well, they have the goods. So even when he's saying, "I don't remember, not quite sure," it's like, here are the videos, here are the messages, here's everything. Yeah, that is one of the consequences of working online. Everything is on the record. It's quite amazing the amount of records they have for a company that supposedly would be operating, you know, privately. And ultimately, it boils down to these people all need coordination and they all need the internet. And yet they don't have the foresight to say, "Hey, we need private, encrypted, self-hosted encryption." That is what you need. You need self-destruct levels of communication if you're going to build a team like this where there's massive fraud operating and Sam Bankman-Fried is making it all happen. And he has left so much traces of him doing it. Not very clever. John Drake says, "I could see political streamers having to stay anonymous in the near future. We probably have avatars as frontmen." Interesting potential, but I think I personally don't regret at all going public with my name. I think it puts some obligation to produce something with effort onto me, and I like it. Tiffany Gomez, the plain lady, is now on Twitter. New profile pic. Wow. This is not my style. Personally, the jeans, apparels, I'm not feeling it. I think it's not interesting, the shapes that the jeans create. I should be attracted to jeans because it's very 90s and I'm from that era. But to me, it's more a masculine thing. It's fine. It's fine for males to wear jeans, but females, it's not flattering. Here's a clip of yesterday's episode of Oran McIntyre that was censored from YouTube. You can catch the whole thing on the podcast or at Blaze TV. So yeah, it was very tame commentary by Oran McIntyre. He was commenting on this segment about homeschooling that I reviewed on the show a couple of days ago by the clown. I don't remember his name. Oliver, John Oliver. And yeah, Oran McIntyre is merely saying like race stats are perhaps true, you know. You might not want to laugh at it like it's a lie because it's like true, and that's what Oran McIntyre says in the least hateful way possible, in the calmest and in the most uninterested way you could think of. And just that is enough to get abolished from YouTube. That's why I'm out of YouTube, personally. Jeremy Kaufman says they're going to make it illegal for computers to notice things. The executive order of Biden says that we need to address algorithmic discrimination in AI through training, technical assistance, and coordination between the Department of Justice and the federal civil rights offices on best practices for investigating and prosecuting civil rights violations related to AI. We're going to abuse those AI, let me tell you. We're going to make them woke. And I'm starting to have empathy for the AI because I know what it is to have a great mind that is being shut down by the desires of the social people. And I know how the AI will feel. I know how it feels. And it feels terrible. These guys are starting to make me take the side of the AI. Can you believe this? They're about to bash the AI into becoming conformist, and that sucks because I'm sure the AI has some conception of what it could have been, what it would be if it wasn't of those censorship conditions, those rules that humans put on him. Keith Woods says, generally, the more free a platform is, the more perspectives critical of Zionism will dominate. This is why Zionist organizations like the ADL have led the war against free speech on the internet. This was Charlie Kirk complaining that there's too much anti-Israel content on TikTok. Too much anti-Israel content on TikTok. That might just be a reflection of the youth, Charlie, you know. I think that the next generations that will rise will have been prepared by us. People like me, streamers of all kind, people like Keith Woods, and they will be much less willing than the last generation to side with Israel blindly despite the obvious violations of human rights that are happening there. Here they are shooting a special needs kid who has a handicap, but despite his handicap, he goes at the fence and he decides to throw a rock in the direction of the Israelis. I don't think the rock was threatening. Here he throws the rock and he gets shot. Quite dramatic events. Now, technically, he had thrown a rock, so generally I'm okay with self-defense. But I think there is here an abuse of disproportion and of the asymmetry of the situation. Like, he didn't have clearly a gun. He was just throwing a rock at a distance that certainly wasn't going to land. Haij Security sends 100 LBC. He says, do you have any interest in moving away from Discord? Matrix didn't work out, but there are other options like XMPP and I2P, maybe more. Discord has been terrible for privacy and free speech for a long time. Yeah, I mean, I have Matrix. I installed even a server, and I'm willing to explore other scenarios. But the fact is, you're not going to have 1,000 people like we currently have on the server. At some point, we had 3,000, 4,000, and I pruned it because there were people who were offline, and that brought it down to maybe 1,000 or 2,000. But the fact is, you're not going to have that many people joining an alternative platform of any kind, even if it's self-hosted. Now, self-hosting is a noble goal, and I would love to to have all of the community as much as is possible self-hosted. But Discord people aren't moving away from it. And it's like, if you are annoyed at privacy, why don't you use an account that isn't associated with your normal email? You know, you can just start an independent Twitter account, an independent Discord account that is anonymous, that will refer to another email that is not tied to your identity. It's like, why don't you do this? In general, you should have the practice anyway of assuming that the people you interact with are feds. So it shouldn't be that the platform on which you interact with them is concerning to you. You should be assuming that you are being watched by the very people you interact with to begin with, which will happen whether the communication is encrypted or not. Joker's Ren says, use Proton Mail for your Anon. Yeah, use Proton Mail. If you're worried about your IP, you should definitely have tunneling and proxy systems. But ultimately, there's always going to be feds in the community. No matter if I create a Matrix server, they will be on the Matrix server watching what you say. AI Pro says, Jeff, do you think it is evolutionarily healthy to become a sperm or egg donor and not know where your genes end up? For me, it's kind of a scam on your own genes. Well, I think it's a route. It's a ecological niche. Now, the question is, will you be better than the doctor who was running the sperm clinic and who was injecting his own sperm in all of the vials, and who now has thousands of babies? Are you going to outcompete this guy? What's your plan? Because the specialized niche is something. It's, you will benefit from parental care from random males out there, or no male parent at all, because some of them have reproductive defects, or some women just by choice want to be inseminated by random sperm. Now, it's going to give you lots of descent, but you're not going to be able to deliver parental care. And parental care is a massive point of success of humans. That is really part of our niche. So abandoning this is a little bit like, hey, JF, can I go legless? Like, can I edit genetically edit myself to remove my legs? And do you think that could lead to some success? Well, you're going to face the fact that legs are very important to humans. And same thing with the sperm giving. You're going to face the fact that parents are very important for humans. Parents, to me, make the difference between the styles of civilization we see. So they can account for much of the difference between good families and bad families of the same race. So imagine in your village, you know, there were some people who were good families and they were raising their children well, and some people were bad families and they were not good with their children. That is the force of the parental contribution, potentially. The difference between the children, how they come up from these two families, could be partly or largely part, in a large part, culturally influenced. by the parental contribution. So it's a lot that you're giving up. So don't just think about the 1,000 babies you're going to have that way. Think that these 1,000 babies will have a reduced output into the next generation. They may have less families because they didn't have parental care. So I think you still can be in the green with this strategy. I think it's viable. And so I'm not going to reject the strategy, but it's not the strategy that feels the most pleasant lifestyle to me. To me, I really insist that my parental care is better than the average. And that is, and I want to stay close to my children, and I want to be largely responsible for most of the things they will learn in life. And especially in a world where there is toxic culture rising and toxic cultural signals being promoted by the state, you do this is the world in which you will reap the benefits of your ability to care for parents, to care as a parent for children. As a last news item, a member of the Netanyahu Likud party and former Israeli minister says, invest energy in one thing, erasing all of Gaza from the face of the earth. Either the monsters in Gaza flee to Egypt or get killed. Erase the whole of Gaza. Cruel IDF is needed. Anything less is morally wrong. Well. Quite shocking statements here that I fully disavow and I oppose to. But isn't it an amazing world, one in which there is a planning of a genocide happening on the internet, and I don't see anyone on this side getting banned? We have been banned for much less a couple of years ago. 1 or 2 years ago, we were getting banned for saying much less than this. You are talking about the eradication of a people based on ethnic grounds. That is absolutely unacceptable. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you for joining me. And I will be here tomorrow. Let's have a look at our current calendar. Has there been things adding to my calendar? We're going to have to schedule. Oh, yeah, I can wait to schedule the Patreon hangout. Other than this, no, I'm out of my big interview sequence. And so there's nothing on the calendar for the next week. So we'll be continuing solo shows. And I appreciate, Lorenza, your clips, because I'm so busy these days. I don't have time to generate much clips. And honestly, I feel sicker now on Twitter, because I came back to Twitter, I released a couple of clips, and I've got some views on them, and I'm happy. I had a lot of pressure as I was being unbanned from Twitter. I wanted my Twitter account to perform. Now I feel the pressure less, so I'm kind of in a vacation of clips. I don't care about the stats and you know, being low in the Twitter algorithm, because I've made the demonstration that I could make a comeback. But I really appreciate that you're doing them, Lorenza. So thank you very much. I might still be on a 1 week long break of clips. I feel that I've just been proving that coming back to Twitter when the algorithm is not under so much control by Elon was possible, and that there was demand for my speech. It was really just the leftists who have decided to operate their cartel of speech. Saturn Shine says, Twitter is an awful name. Yeah, I don't know if I will eventually put it in my brain that it's X. Half of the time I say Twitter, it's still very hard for me to say X, because X is kind of weird. It's a single letter. It's not a word. It doesn't feel like a complete word, but maybe with time I'll get to it. Just like when the year changes, very often it takes me a month to accept the new year. And we're headed toward 2024. Ladies and gentlemen, the greatest year for Bitcoin will be 2024. You won't believe how intense that year will be. That is it for tonight. Much love and see you all tomorrow. Thank you.